Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Signs with Amy Jurevich. The summer movie season has come to an end, and with big releases from DC Studios, Warner, and Disney, what were some of the best things we saw come to theaters? From the heroics of Superman to the cute adventures of Lilo and Stitch and How to Train Your Dragon, to the laughs of The Naked Gun, to the thrilling horror of Weapons, there was something for everyone this summer. And looking into the fall, with Paul Thomas Anderson's One Battle After Another kicking us off, what should we be adding to our watch list? Joining us now to discuss it all is Scott Mance, film critic, entertainment journalist, and producer. Welcome to All Sides, Scott.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
So one of the biggest movies of the summer was James Gunn's Superman, kicking off this new phase in his new universe. And we're going to hear, this is one of the fights between Lex Luthor and Superman.
1A! 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 1A!
What are you smirking at, you idiot?
Brain beats prawn.
So, Scott, what did you think of Superman? Was it the big win that DC needed it to be?
Well, Amy, that's a loaded question. I think the fact that Superman, it was a reboot that had a lot going on in it. So, full disclosure, I'm an original Superman movie. I'm a Christopher Reeve fan all the way. I still think Christopher Reeve is the GOAT when it comes to playing Superman. And he's a really, really tough act to follow. And I thought this new Superman with David Corenswet as Superman and Clark Kent, directed by James Gunn, written by James Gunn. Honestly, I thought the movie was just okay. The problem I had with the movie is that there was way too much going on in the film. There were too many other characters. The movie was all over the place. And it was a Superman film guest starring Superman. Also, Amy, I thought the problem with Superman was that, you know, here we are in 2025 in the last, you know, I would say 17 years since the first Iron Man in 2008. We've had so many superhero movies, starting with Iron Man, Avengers Endgame, and now you've got a new Superman, and it just felt like more of the same. So overall, I thought Superman was good. It just wasn't great. It didn't rock my world like I was really hoping it would. But I know a lot of people who liked it.
Well, and it did kind of rock the box office. So as far as the money it made, was it surprising to you that it ended up doing so well? Because it was one of the biggest movies of the summer.
Well, okay. So that's another sort of a question that you got to look at it from two different sides. Mm-hmm. On one hand, yes, the movie did well. It made $616 million worldwide on a budget of at least $225 million. Now, 6 years ago, a movie like Superman would have made well over $1 billion worldwide. But for the most part, ever since the lockdown lifted and people started going back to the movies, not enough people are going back to the movies. So while $616 million might look good on paper, in the grand scheme where a lot of these blockbusters this summer, I would say that Superman underperformed along with the Fantastic Four movie, which made $522 million, and the Thunderbolts movie, which kickstarted the summer back in the beginning of May, which only made about $383 million worldwide. So Superman did good, not great, but if you have a movie like F1, the movie with Brad Pitt, the racing movie, that movie made $629 million beating Superman. So Superman, I feel like it should have done better.
Okay. But maybe the barometer is different. The thermometer doesn't go quite as high as it used to, because we're in a new era now of the way people watch movies. So in this new era, I think more than $600 million is probably good, right?
That's a great point. That's the point, Amy, is that 600 million is the new billion. You know what I mean?
It's going backwards. Yeah, got it.
For a movie to make $600 million now, when movie theaters are still struggling with people coming back to movie theaters, I mean, it's a fact that the lockdown really sped up the process by which people are staying home to watch movies on their streaming services. And after the lockdown lifted and movie theaters reopened, everyone was really used to just watching movies at home, and they would rather watch movies at home. A lot of great TV at home. Going to the movies is more expensive now between ticket prices and parking, and certainly the concessions are incredibly expensive. So movie theaters are still struggling. So the barometer, like you point out, Amy, has been lowered, understandably.
So we saw this summer live action remakes of Lilo and Stitch and How to Train Your Dragon. Is this the new family outing? Do people still make it a family outing to go to the movies to see something like Lilo and Stitch and How to Train Your Dragon?
Absolutely, Amy, yes. If there was one sure thing, or at least close to a sure thing this summer, it was family movies. Lilo and Stitch, the original film came out in 2002, although there was a Disney TV series on Disney Plus. And, you know, the character of Stitch has become just as iconic, like at the theme parks now, as Mickey Mouse himself. So you already had that awareness. You had fans of the original taking their kids to see Lilo and Stitch. It is the only movie released in 2025 to pass $1 billion. So that's saying a lot. And like you point out, How to Train Your Dragon, now this is the live action version. The original animated film came out in 2010. That movie was great. But the live action version was surprisingly really, really good. It made $636 million worldwide, another family film. And then earlier in the year, back in April, you had the Minecraft movie based on a video game, but it is still a family film. That made $960 million, almost $1 billion. But not all family films did well. Pixar's Elio, remember that? A lot of people don't.
Poor Elio. Yeah. Elio. I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it too, but it bombed. It only made $150 million worldwide. And the Smurfs movie and the sequel, The Bad Guys 2, those movies underperformed. But still, Lilo and Stitch, How to Train Your Dragon, and the Minecraft movie are proof that families go out to the movies in droves.
Now, there's also, you know, remakes are the thing. And we even had a new The Naked Gun. It premiered over the summer. A fun comedy bringing back some 1980s nostalgia. Here's a clip.
Apparently, some of the bank robbers you put in the ICU, they're lawyering up to sue the city.
That's ridiculous. They're criminals.
It's the law.
Since when do cops have to follow the law?
Since forever.
Oh, yeah? And who's going to arrest me? Other cops?
Yes.
Is she serious?
Is he serious?
So what did you think of The Naked Gun?
Well, I love the original films that starred Leslie Nielsen between 1988 and 1994. You know, those three movies are really funny. You know, they were done by the Zucker brothers, who did the Airplane movie from 1980, which is, I think, the funniest movie ever made. So I feel like the Naked Gun remake starring Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson, I thought it was funny. I thought it was good for the first half. The problem is, I felt like it couldn't maintain the momentum to carry it through to the end and stick the landing. And that movie was really short. It was only 85 minutes. So I thought it certainly had the feel of the Liam Neeson movies or of the Leslie Nielsen movies, but it was good, not great. I think there's a sweet spot that you have to get with that kind of humor that comes at you from all angles. And, you know, they did good enough, but, you know, there's a magic to those original films that I felt that the reboot just didn't have.
See, that was a movie to me where I was like, oh, I can wait for it to come to streaming. I don't need to go to the theater. Whereas I'm a huge Superman fan, so I can disagree with what you said at the beginning. But I wanted to see Superman in the theater, big screen. And then I wanted the family feel of Lilo and Stitch because we as a family love that movie. So there's different people make up different reasons to go to the theater versus stay home. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, look, to your point about Superman, I know a lot of people, you know, moviegoers and certainly journalists and critics who are, well, let's just say a lot younger than I am, who really loved it. And by the way, I did love David Corn Sweat in the role. I just wish that the movie just focused on him instead of bringing in all these other superheroes from the Justice League or the soon to be Justice League. Just focus on Superman.
I'm a journalist, so I'm a sucker for anything with Clark Kent, Lois Lane journalism thing. You
oh,
know?
There you
so
go.
That's
you
yeah. Sure. this is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the summer movie season with Scott Mance, film critic, entertainment journalist, and producer. Before we move on to preview fall just a little bit, was there any summer movie that was underrated or something that you saw over the summer that you wish more people saw?
Well, the movie that I really want to point out, because it was rare that it did so well, was Weapons with Julia Garner. That movie came out in August. You know, it's not based on a franchise. It's not a superhero movie. It was a movie that kind of had some buzz because the trailer was very ambiguous, and you know, people did see it. It did very, very well at the box office. You know, it's probably going to be streaming on you know, Max, HBO Max, very, very soon. You know, Warner Brothers HBO Max. That movie was fantastic. It was 2 hours of tension. You know, I guess it's kind of a horror movie, but I thought that Weapons was fantastic. That's the movie that really, I would say probably one of my favorite movies of the summer, because it caught me by such a big surprise. And if you haven't seen Weapons, I don't know if it's still in theaters in Columbus, but it will be on HBO Max very, very soon. And that is where you got to see this movie. It's fantastic. And Amy Madigan is going to get nominated for supporting actress.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about fall movies, and we can preview a couple. Paul Thomas Anderson's newest film, One Battle After Another, with Leonardo DiCaprio, just hit theaters. Here's a clip.
And what I'm doing here is I'm creating a closed circuit. Very important to keep your cap shunted like this so you don't accidentally detonate your charge.
Don't stop.
I want you to create a show. This is an announcement of revolution. The message is clear.
I'll be seeing you very soon.
All right, so Paul Thomas Anderson, Leonardo DiCaprio, lots of big names. What do you think about One Battle After Another?
What I think of One Battle After Another, Amy, is this. If you were going to ask me right now, at this moment, here on October 15th, what movie is going to win the Academy Award for Best Picture, I would tell you without hesitation that it's going to be One Battle After Another. This movie is fantastic. It is an incredible ride. It is super intense, but it is also loaded with a lot of humor and levity, thank goodness. Amazing performances across the board from Leonardo DiCaprio, Sean Penn, wow, and Benicio del Toro, of course, and Paul Thomas Anderson, who's been making one great movie after another. You know, going back to Boogie Nights and Magnolia, he's been nominated, whether as a producer, as a director, or as a screenwriter, for an Academy Award 12 times, and he has never won. And Amy, guess what? He is overdue. This is his year. Remember when Martin Scorsese won Best Picture and Best Director for The Departed back in 2006?
That was his time, yeah.
That was his time, and this is Paul Thomas Anderson's. Now, I could be wrong, because there's still a couple of movies that I still have yet to see, like Wicked for Good. This is the second Wicked movie, and I loved the first Wicked movie.
Same, same.
Yeah, if the second film, which opens on November 21st, my birthday, if that is at least as good as the first movie, then I think that also has a very, very good chance to win. You know, the first movie made was a big hit, making over $700 million, and it was nominated for Best Picture.
Is there anything else you're looking forward to that hasn't come out yet besides Wicked for Good?
Well, I can tell you, Amy, because I go to those fall film festivals in Telluride in Toronto, so I see a lot of movies in advance that are opening in the next couple weeks. For example, next Friday, October 24th, if you love The Boss, Bruce Springsteen, you got to see the new Springsteen movie. It's fantastic. Jeremy Allen White, who's a 2-time Emmy winner for, of course, The Bear, is terrific in the film. And it's a much more dialed back, I would say, a reserved film because it's not like a splashy big biopic like Rocket Man or Bohemian Rhapsody. But that movie is excellent. The new film starring Emma Stone, Begonia, directed by Yorgos Lanthimos. They did Poor Things and The Favourite together. That is a wild, incredible movie that opens on Halloween. And then Running Man, starring Glenn Powell, who's in everything these days, that opens on November 14th. That's going to be a lot of fun. And then in December, just when you thought it was you were done going to Pandora, Avatar: Fire and Ash, the third movie in the Avatar movies, written and directed by James Cameron, that is going to be a heck of a thing to see on the big screen on December 19th.
All right. Well, we'll be looking forward to those. And maybe we'll have you back to see if your Oscar prediction comes true. How about
Oh,
that?
you're on.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for joining us. We've been talking with Scott Mance, film critic, entertainment journalist, and producer. Thanks for your time today, Scott.
Thank you, Amy.
And coming up, we're going to talk about some changes we are seeing in the film industry. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Since the first Iron Man hit theaters in 2008, Marvel has dominated the box office, delivering billion-dollar success after billion-dollar success. But they have finally been overtaken. DC Studios' Superman outsold Marvel's Fantastic Four, leading many to wonder if Marvel's unquestioned control of the industry is coming to an end. And that's not the only big movie. Netflix's K-pop Demon Hunters became its most popular movie of all time and a fan favorite. So what do these changes mean for the industry, and what could be the biggest movie of the fall? Joining us now is Paul Dergarabedian. He is the head of Marketplace Trends at Comscore. Welcome back to the show, Paul.
Great to be here, Amy. Thank you so much.
So one of the most surprising things to come out over the summer was the success of Superman over Fantastic Four. I mean, both movies arguably did well, but Superman did better than a Marvel movie. What do you think of Superman doing better at the box office this summer?
Yeah, that was interesting because DC, you know, they've had more of a mixed box office track record traditionally or historically than has Marvel, like you said in the opening here, that, you know, Marvel has been, they have been on a roll for years. Billions of dollars in worldwide box office. But, you know, they did kick off the summer of 2025 with their movie Thunderbolts. And then they also had, as you mentioned, Fantastic Four. Superman, $354 million at the domestic box office. That's the number three film of the year so far. So it is a little bit of a turnaround to see DC having that kind of success. But more importantly is what happens with these superhero movies in the future. Some people feel there's superhero movie fatigue and that kind of thing. I think it's more if a movie is not good, there's bad movie fatigue. I don't think there's necessarily a bias by audiences against a certain genre. It's not just about having too many of them. It's that if the quality doesn't measure up movie after movie, that diminishes the overall branding. Or either for a brand like Marvel or DC, or a genre like horror, which we will talk about because horror is setting a record this year in terms of the domestic box office. And there have been a lot of horror movies. It seems like no matter how many there are, with a couple of exceptions, they've all kind of knocked it out of the park. So pretty interesting.
Yeah, the Superman versus Fantastic Four thing was interesting just because, you know, it's superhero movie after superhero movie, and they always... They both ended with a teaser because there will be future movies, right?
Right.
I I liked Superman better than Fantastic Four, but Fantastic Four had a better teaser at the end, in my opinion. Not that my
there
opinion
you go.
Matters.
And sometimes that's the takeaway, and you get excited for the next movie. And you also mentioned K-pop Demon Hunters, and you know, to have alternative content or movies that kind of come out of nowhere and top the box office. And K-pop Demon Hunters had been on Netflix for months, and then they put it in theaters for a weekend and it tops the box office. So that's and that's great for movie theaters. And then of course, you know, the Infinity Castle, the Demon Slayer, I guess if you have demon in the title, you know, Demon Hunters or
all
Demon
you need,
Slayer.
Yeah.
But it's really cool to see a movie like Demon Slayer, Infinity Castle. That movie opened to $71 million just 3 weeks ago. And I didn't see that one coming. And I think that's great because we need movies like that to come along and bolster the box office. And right now we're definitely in the heat of awards season with One Battle After Another and some other great independent titles or art house titles, as we call them. So there's really something for everyone, but it really, the ebb and flow of the box office is just this thing that always happens. I've been doing this over 30 years. And, you know, you go back to summer with the May box office was up 76% over May of last year, because we did have a Marvel movie to kick off this summer. We had a Memorial Weekend that was a record breaker, over $300 million for all the films collectively over Memorial Weekend, with Mission Stitch Possible, as we all remember, really lighting up the box office. And so it's just, it's a roller coaster ride. And then of course we could talk about Sinners. That was a kind of a big surprise and did so well. A Minecraft movie was another one. After a really quiet first quarter in April, again, the box office really heated up with a Minecraft movie and then Sinners and on into the summer.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the movie industry with Paul Dare Garabedian, head of marketplace trends at Comscore. Let's lean in for a second to Netflix with K-pop Demon Hunters, because it was a Netflix exclusive animated movie, but it was one of the biggest hits of the summer, and it became Netflix's most popular movie of all time. Here is a clip from the main character, Rumi.
This is a battle for hearts and minds, a battle for the fans. And what's the biggest battlefield of them all?
The Idol Awards.
That's right. We have to crush that stage. Be better than we've ever been with the show to end the Saja Boys for good. Zoe, we're going to need a new song.
So how do we measure the success of K-pop Demon Hunters compared to something like a Superman or a Fantastic Four? Because for Netflix, it's the number of streams and you have to subscribe to Netflix. So it's not making, you know, $300 million. So talk to me about this idea of Netflix having one of the biggest hit movies of the summer.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting because to have a film like K-pop Demon Hunters hit theaters, and you know, Netflix doesn't report their numbers in a traditional manner for the movie theater side of things, but it was reported that movie opened around $18 to $20 million in theaters, and that's quite significant. I think what it says to Netflix, and should say to everyone, is that Netflix, obviously a huge player, ubiquitous, it's almost like a utility, you know, you almost have to have Netflix to get all this great content. But the fact that then that movie was in theaters and that communal experience, I mean, that should not be lost on Ted Sarandos, Greg Peters, those who run the executive team at Netflix, that the movie theater is wildly important. And if you look at Taylor Swift, how she recently utilized the movie theaters to get her branding out there and had a nice solid $34 million opening weekend, or a single weekend, because it only played for one weekend on the Showgirl movie. But to have K-pop out there doing that kind of business really does say to people in theaters, says that the synergies between the big screen and the small screen should not be taken lightly. And that I've always said, I think streaming and the movie theater are complementary and additive, not adversarial, because if you're watching a lot of content at home, you're going to love to go out to the movie theater. It's a different type of experience. It's communal. It's cultural. Obviously, social media, people love to go into the theater lobby and post pictures of themselves. not necessarily going to do that at home. So there just is that differentiation between that big screen communal outside of the home experience and the sitting on the couch or in front of your small screen watching Netflix or other streaming services, of which there are many, including Apple and Amazon and Paramount Plus and Peacock and all the different availability there, plus YouTube. Can't forget YouTube. That's a massive footprint there for that streaming service.
How can we discern that? How can we discern between like a highest grossing movie, most profitable Netflix movie, most popular movie? how are we supposed to discern which barometer we should be paying attention to?
Wow, that's, I mean, if we can crack that code, Amy, we'll you know, only the entire entertainment space. I mean, that's the thing. We're so fragmented and differentiated, both in terms of, you know, where the revenue comes from. How do you, what are the metrics? What are the measurements there? You know, at ComScore, that's what we do. We there are many screens and you have to look at the big picture, right? So, but I think how you can measure success, look, with box office, it's pretty straightforward and transparent. Movie opens, we're getting the data hourly and weekly and monthly and obviously every weekend. When it comes to streaming, you know, a lot of times these streaming services keep their real numbers, you know, the actual viewership close to the vest. But remember too, it, you know, I could put on a movie, watch 10 minutes, turn it off, go back, watch it again. It's non-linear, right? Mm-hmm. But when you go to the movie theater, it's very linear. You go in, you have a prescribed time, you sit down, you watch the movie, you come home, whatever you do. Whereas with these streaming services, I think it's more about, are we talking about it? I mean, the fact that we're talking about K-pop may be the biggest or the most important currency for that film. But I also think it's important for the movie theater, because when you see that a Netflix or, you know, a Netflix show, so to speak, winds up doing so well in a movie theater, and that they get another bite of the apple there to get the word out about that, about the K-pop phenomenon, and that's great for Netflix. That's going to pay dividends for them down the road. Now, obviously.
Do you think more streaming services are going to put things in movie theaters? Because I don't, K-pop Demon Hunter seems like an outlier with that.
That is a bit of an outlier. And, you know, we may see more of that. I think, look, when anything is successful in Hollywood or in entertainment, everyone else is going to be looking at, how did they do that with K-pop? Let's try and do that as well. Because again, if you can be, have your brand in every medium or every platform, meaning either the, you know, the streaming side, and look at Taylor Swift. I mean, look at what that means for that official release party of a showgirl. What that means not only for movie theaters, but also for the music business. Mm-hmm. If you think about the overlap there, the halo effect that can have, and then her teaming with AMC Theaters. I mean, that's a stroke of genius. And think about that too. You know, that's that may be an outlier as well. I mean, Taylor Swift clearly announced that, I don't know, about 2 weeks before it hit theaters. Normally you need about a year to do that buildup for a movie, for a movie release in theaters. She could, with her footprint on social media, her influence, let's say, she was able, like, within 2 weeks, build up to a number one debut at $34 million at the domestic box office. That's pretty incredible. Will we see more of that? Beyonce had her, her tour that was famously on the big screen. Mm-hmm. I think we will see more of that overlap, but you're right. It's not for every movie, not for everything. But I think, and we're seeing also in theaters, a lot of anniversary titles, films that have been, you know, that are being re-released in theaters that came out 20, 30, 50, 60 years ago. So everything is about content. And movie theaters, the more the merrier, the more types of content, and not just putting movie theaters in the box of only having narrative films or traditional films, but you can also have concerts, release parties, one-offs like K-pop that just plays for one weekend, and same with the showgirl release party. So to me, that's really exciting. And I can't imagine that you would have seen this type of phenomenon years ago. It really showcases the movie theater's ability to amplify great content of various types on those big screens.
Before we run out of time, I wanted to back up to what you mentioned earlier about horror movies. Are we in a horror movie era? People want to see them on the big screen. They want the jump scare.
We are. And it's really, I say this is the best year for horror since the year that Bela Lugosi was born, because this has been just an incredible year for horror movies, Sinners, of course, to me. But Sinners is different to me. I don't know that I would just categorize it as a horror movie. It's so much more. But horror movies, according to our ComScore data, have earned already $1.2 billion at the box office. That's a new record, beating 2017, which was the first year that horror movies hit a billion at the domestic box office, when It and Get Out and Split were in movie theaters. But Sinners and Weapons and so many really amazing movies. Weapons saved the day at the end of the summer. Zach Kreger's movie, he had directed Barbarian. And Sinners, I think, could be a contender for Best Picture, which would be, you know, that's a rare thing to have a horror movie. I always say that they used to be, I don't think anymore with the money they're making, but I used to always say that horror movies were the Rodney Dangerfield of genres. Mm. They couldn't get no respect. And you better respect the horror movies. They're making a lot of money. And by the way, they're generally very profitable, because unlike, let's say, a Superman movie or a Marvel movie, you don't need a ton of money to make a truly horrifying and scary horror movie. But people love being in that movie theater collectively scared. Like you said, the jump scares are everybody. You can hear people, like the sense of dread right before the music cues that indicate that you're about to jump out of your seat. There's real, other than comedy, I think horror is really the best genre to see in a movie theater, but also translates well to the small screen, because if you're alone in your house at 2 a.m. watching Weapons or something, that's pretty darn scary as well.
What was the biggest disappointment of the summer? What movie really flopped?
Wow, you're really putting me on the spot here. You know, I think that a lot of people had expected, you know, some bigger things from some of those movies that were the big brands. I mean, if we get into like the, because what happened in the summer, May started off so strong, and then things really slowed down in the ensuing months. But, you know, I think Megan 2.0 was a film that was a horror movie that, again, many had expected to do well. The first film had been such a phenomenon, the first Megan, and even Jason Blum had indicated that turning Megan into the protagonist rather than the antagonist may have hurt that film a little bit. That one stands out a little bit to me. You know, there were some other really interesting films out there that I think people had hoped would have done more, like Elio, the Disney film. But overall, it was a pretty solid summer. I just think that we, after an incredibly strong May, a huge month of May, then we saw June, July, and August kind of not do as well compared to last year. But I remember having Lilo and Stitch, that movie was huge this summer, a Jurassic World Rebirth, some really terrific films that I think really were emblematic of what the summer is all about. And that's escapism, just going out and have fun at the movie theaters. And F1, the movie, was really cool because that was a true original. That was an Apple film, by the way. They teamed up with Warner's to great results for that. But there's always going to be disappointments in there, but sometimes that's just the nature of it. That's the ups and downs of the box office.
In the final couple minutes we have, let's just talk, you know, fall preview. What are you looking forward to that's still coming that you, or what are you really intrigued by?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to The Running Man. I really like Edgar Wright, who directed Baby Driver and Last Night in Soho. And that's with Glenn Powell, who was in Top Gun Maverick. And, you know, he's a terrific up and coming actor. But also Predator Badlands is on the way in November. Now, we got to mention Wicked for Good. Wicked, obviously, the first film, a huge phenomenon. That's coming out November 21st. Zootopia 2 right around Thanksgiving. Five Nights at Freddy's 2, which is, you know, the first film opened to over $80 million. That's a horror movie. When that first film came out, I didn't even know what it was, and it was a huge box office hit. Five Nights at Freddy's 2, and of course, Avatar Fire and Ash. There's a SpongeBob movie. But I'm really intrigued by Song Sung Blue. That movie looks really cool to me. The Neil Diamond movie just looks so cool. And also, let's not forget Deliver Me From Nowhere, the Bruce Springsteen movie that's coming up. So those I love music movies. But the Neil Diamond movie looks cool. Songs, Hugh Jackman, Kate Hudson. That one's coming out on Christmas Day. And that looks great.
Do you think
so? Put music in a theater, I'm in.
Do you think Wicked for Good can live up to its own expectations?
Wow, I don't know, Amy. That's a tough one because the first film was such a phenomenon.
Yeah.
And, you know, lightning sometimes can strike twice, but that second film has a lot to live up to because the first film was such a massive success. But the trailer looks great. And actually, right now at the Sphere in Vegas, they have The Wizard of Oz in the Sphere, which I was lucky enough to see, which was absolutely incredible. So movies, old and new, all connected together in that way, which is really cool.
Well, I want to thank you for your time. We've been talking with Paul Dergarabedian, the head of Marketplace Trends at Comscore. Paul, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
And coming up, we're going to talk with a local movie theater about how they're getting people to come out to the movies. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Ohio got some representation this summer as Cleveland's skyline, monuments, and landmarks were shown throughout DC's Superman. Could movies be coming back to Ohio? And what about watching movies right here in Ohio? With theater restoration starting in Cincinnati and more film events around Columbus, what is the future of being a film fan in the Buckeye State? Joining us now is Tyler Campbell, assistant manager of Studio 35 Cinema and Draft House. Welcome to the show, Tyler.
Thanks for having me, Amy. I appreciate it.
So for Studio 35, what was your biggest movie this summer? What did most people come see?
Sure. I mean, there was some obvious, the big tentpole stuff. We did well with Superman. We did well with a lot of these sort of blockbuster stuff you'd anticipate. But I think the stuff that really stood out in terms of 2025 was some of the success we had with things you wouldn't anticipate. I know when we had the film Friendship here, which is a relatively small budget A24 movie, there was one day in particular where we were the highest grossing theater in the country for that particular film.
Really?
Which for a house of two screens is abnormal. So I think we saw a real shift this year with us specifically in regards to what our clients want and what our clientele kind of jives for, which is a younger crowd, maybe more interested in something a little against the grain. But with that said, of course, your Jurassic World rebirths are always going to pay the bills as well. So we haven't quite yet shifted to a new paradigm of film going, but we just see a noticeable uptick in stuff that you maybe wouldn't anticipate. Certainly horror is having a great year. So a lot of our horror titles outperformed a lot of expectations. But yeah, it was interesting. It was an interesting summer in terms of data points for us to consider moving forward about what movies are going to do well for us and what movies are going to do well for the industry writ large.
What was Friendship about? I missed that one completely.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It is an A24 comedy starring Paul Rudd.
I love Paul Rudd. How did I miss this one? Yeah.
he's playing against type in some ways. It is almost sort of the inverse of I Love You, Man. It's a dark comedy with Tim Robinson, who's become famous for I Think You Should Leave, which is hilarious, cringeworthy comedy at its finest. So this is basically a two-hour version of one of those sketches. Nationally didn't do terribly well, but I think just kind of hit the zone for us in a way that really popped off and was really interesting to see. I would recommend checking it out. Certainly, it's a tough sit in some ways, but when it's funny, it's hysterical, and we'll take that.
Were there any movies for you this summer that you had more expectations of? Like, did you show something and it ended up being a flop and that surprised you?
I was pretty bullish on 28 Years Later, which is actually a movie I personally loved. It's like one of my favorite movies of the year. I think that for us financially didn't it didn't really come through, which is, again, against hype, because Sinners and Final Destination Bloodlines and Weapons and a lot of stuff in that genre space is crushed for us, frankly, this year. So that the fact that that was the outlier was a little surprising. Eddington, I don't know if seven people in the world saw Eddington, unfortunately, but for us, again, A24 films have been a real boon for us. I think we've found a lot of success with them. And that one, I mean, you could have taken everybody who came to see it and put it on a small bus and still had space to pick up more guests. So that was unfortunate again, but that's the beauty of it all is that, and I think it's kind of indicative of where we're at as an industry is that, we've gotten past the existential crisis of COVID. We have enough evidence to suggest that theatrical exhibition is valued and that there's a future for it, but it is much more volatile to decide or to determine what's going to work and what's not going to work. You have to sort of be nimble in that regard. So yeah, sometimes you just miss, but hopefully you have enough hits that it keeps the ship afloat is the idea.
Yeah. Earlier in the show, we were talking about how, you know, it used to be the barometer was that a movie needed to make $1 billion. But something like Superman made 300 something million domestically, 600 million around the world. And that was really good for it. So like the barometer is lower of what a good thing is. And if we just accept that, and then things will be okay moving forward. So have you adjusted your barometer of what's good in the past few years?
Sure. Yeah. I think from a business perspective, certainly, I mean, we're a two screen house. So what's good for us is more micro question, but I think as somebody who's very interested and concerned about the overall health of the industry, of course, we're seeing some macro trends that are worth noting. And yeah, I mean, for a number of years, it was the birthright of every superhero film to gross $1 billion. And it just isn't anymore. You know, I think we've had two films this year cross the $1 billion threshold, one of which, Nezha 2, or like it just didn't perform domestically at all. So it is a new frontier in that way. I think it's better for the industry, frankly, if we become accustomed to celebrating doubles instead of home runs. You know, I think having 100 doubles is great as opposed to the 3 or 4 grand slams we're shooting for. So, you know, if budgets drop for superhero movies, and that means we can highlight and produce other films which are starting to gain traction, I think there's been some audience demand for original programming, and that's bearing itself out. Sinners sort of being the golden sterling example of that this year. But yeah, no, I think if I was on the board of Disney, I'd be much more concerned about it. But I'm not. As somebody who's just a fan of the industry, I think we're being presented with some really exciting opportunities, and part of that is adjusting the expectations of what works because it forces us to try new things.
Well, and another thing that Studio 35 is known for is having events surrounding a movie that, you know, is not your Supermans or your Fantastic Four. You show an old movie, a fan favorite, and you have an event. How are those going for Studio 35?
They're great. I mean, you're right. That's our bread and butter. Mm-hmm. And I think that I was really nervous once, I think, COVID sort of exasperated the process of putting every single film ever produced in the home. You know, I mean, you basically can stream anything. If not, you can rent it on Apple, you can rent it on Amazon. And I think for everybody in the industry, we kind of panicked about that and freaked out. I certainly thought that the market for older titles would die away. And I think that one of the things that's been heartening, and I think comforting for us as a business and as an industry, is that there is anecdotal and legitimate evidence that younger generations in particular do really seem to enjoy repertory theater experiences and seeing films they are told belong on the big screen, I would have never called it. I would have guessed that was a dinosaur. But yeah, no, it certainly maintains here. And I think that obviously if you want to throw a beer tasting on it, that's going to help a little bit. Mm-hmm. If you want to throw bells and whistles at it, that will help a little bit. But even something as simple as just saying, we're going to do a Saturday Cinema Classic series, and we're going to tell you these are the 10 movies you should see on a big screen that came out, you know, 40, 50 years ago, has worked really, really well for us. Mm-hmm. So that's comforting. I mean, that's that for an industry that is perpetually for the past 5 or 6 years been in a very stressful state about whether or not it's a relic. I think that sort of evidence is really helpful to suggest that what we're doing here is not only, I don't want to get high on my horse, but noble or worthwhile. But I do think that's really nice, and it's encouraging about what the future is going to look like. But no, it's been a boon for us forever, and it's continued into 2025 and beyond, hopefully.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the movie industry with Tyler Campbell, assistant manager of Studio 35 Cinema and Draft House. So with the success of Superman, it put the spotlight on Cleveland. Do you think Ohio is going to be a bigger player here in the filmmaking industry? Will more movies be made in Ohio?
I certainly hope so. You know, I know that certainly Cincinnati in the past has had some stretches where they've been a hot destination for film. Columbus, not so much. Hopefully we can get a little more involved in that game. I think that there is something to be said about having film production in your backyard being a lift for aspiring filmmakers, for people who are interested in the industry. I think that not just access, but I think that when you grow up in the shadow of the Hollywood sign in LA, it just isn't daunting to dream about doing it. It's just like, as if you get into like the insurance business or something, or if you get into accounting, it's just like, it's part of it. It's like a Monday through Friday thing. I think for someone who grew up in Ohio and loved this stuff, the idea of making this stuff seemed so foreign and so distant and so impossible. And I think when you have major productions in your backyard, all of a sudden for younger people in particular, it doesn't seem so crazy. All, you know, having been on film sets myself, it is kind of remarkable how it doesn't look like the finished product. And you're like, it does seem attainable when you see how it's done. And it seems like something that's doable. So I certainly hope so. I would have to be a little more schooled on the tax credits to suggest whether or not we're going to see a large wave of this sort of stuff. Unfortunately, we don't have a skyline like Pittsburgh, so they're still going to kind of probably be the regional giant in terms of larger productions. But certainly Cleveland getting Superman, and I know Superman shot quite a bit in Cincinnati as well, is an encouraging sign that the industry might set some roots here. And again, I think that's just only going to help the idea of film production, even at the smallest level in Ohio moving forward, which I think is long overdue at this point.
What about actual movie theaters like your Studio 35? In Cincinnati, there's been numerous incentives, like money given for theater restoration. Is Columbus following that same trend? Have you heard anything about helping theaters like yours, you know, renovate?
I haven't specifically. We're a little unique. We're the only, us and our sister theater in Grandview, we're the only houses of our size and kind of stature that are for profit. So I would imagine, I wouldn't be surprised if there were some nonprofit incentives for some of the other theaters in Columbus, which I'm a huge fan of and support fully. So not on our end necessarily. Fortunately for us, we haven't needed to dive into that. We're an outlier in that way. I think that a big part of that is that we've done a lot of work doing or kind of answering the question that I think every theater needs to ask themselves now, which is, you know, would we exist if movies went away? Which is kind of an antithetical question. I think a lot of theaters would say no, we'll just disappear. But I think we've buoyed ourselves and put ourselves in a good financial position because as a community space, I know dozens of people who come here all the time, every single week, and I have never seen a movie here before. And I think that's a unique set of circumstances. But it does put us in a position where we can sort of take care of that on our own. I know we went through a major multi-million dollar renovation in 2019 to add a second screen and add a pizza kitchen. So we're finding the resources to do it. I know that's not available to everybody, and I'm in full support of the government or anybody helping us out on that front, because I do think there is real value in this. And I think that establishing good theater exhibition is good for culture. It's good for the community. And I love the idea. And if you know of anybody, put me in contact. I'm not going to say some assistance. Yeah, let's do it.
Bring on the money. So do you have, or what films that are coming up in the next few weeks or months are you looking forward to? Is there anything in particular that Studio 35 is doing that you're excited about?
Well, certainly, like, you look at the big names of the couple coming months, the first one that pops off the page is Wicked for Good. You know, Wicked, I still wake up with PTSD dreams or nightmares about the crowds we had last year for it. So I imagine we'll see something very similar here. I know Grandview Theater, our sister theater, is going to be doing beer tastings surrounding that movie, which are almost certainly going to sell out. So get your tickets fast for those.
Like pink and green beer?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
obviously.
We'll get as weird as we possibly can with it. Yeah, food dies great. It's something you can totally consume. Mm-hmm. As far as me personally, I mean, this is prime time for cinephiles. We're all the stuff we've heard whispers of from festivals, starting all the way back at Sundance, the beginning of the year, all the way up until the ones like, you know, New York and Toronto, Chicago just started today or starting this week. All that stuff's going to start rolling out for us in Columbus, and that's exciting. So movies like Sentimental Value or Hamnet, these are movies I'm personally very excited about. But beyond that, you know, we're going to continue to do beer tastings with some of the older titles Tombstone's coming up, which I'm very excited about. Pay some respects to our good friend Val Kilmer, who passed away this year, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But we're going to keep doing, you know, a lot of that sort of stuff. That's going to be our focus in terms of the special stuff. But we'll do first run throughout. Again, it's never been harder to pick the ones that win, but in a good way, I'm surprised more often with ones that pop off that I assume we're going to be duds. So being nimble and being versatile and being able to come up with events that offset that unpredictability has been big for us. And we're excited. And yeah, we'll batten down the hatches for Wicked, and we'll see you in November. You know, that's kind of where we're at right now.
Well, when you get it together to honor Diane Keaton and show First Wives Club, yes. Can you save me a ticket?
I would be honored to. Trust me, we've had some Diane Keaton conversations over the past few days, you know, justifiably. So we'd love to do something like that. It'd be great.
All right. Well, I request either Father of the Bride, First Wives Club, all of the above. So
let's do a marathon. Yeah. Let's book a whole day. Why not? Right.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time today. We've been talking with Tyler Campbell, Assistant Manager of Studio 35 Cinema and Draft House. Tyler, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I want to say thank you to my staff, producers Marcus Charleston and Aaron Esmont-Rabinowitz, student producers Iza Huck and Colin Simpson and Kiara Burson, video production by The Ohio Channel, board operation by Chris Johnston and Cameron Howard. And I want to say a special thank you to Colin Simpson, who produced this show today. If you missed any part of today's show, listen back at WOSU.org/allsides, and you can also subscribe to the podcast. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.